Hi, this is Denise LaRosa, and you're listening to Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa, a podcast show created by a mom for moms. I do not take for granted that you have a lot on your plate, yet you are taking the time to listen to my show. I am truly grateful. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/momtalk. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Be sure to stay connected by visiting www.denisenlarosa.com, following me on Twitter at Denise N. LaRosa, and liking my Facebook page, Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa. It is my hope that Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa will motivate, inspire, and inform you along your journey in motherhood. So let's dive in. As a former elementary school educator and now mother of two girls, bullying is a topic that I am very passionate about. I've been bullied, and I'm sad to say that I've also been the bully and the bystander at various points in my life. The world of social media has taken bullying to a whole other level, and it goes far beyond the lunchroom, gym, and playground nonsense that I had to deal with as a child. Sadly, it seems like every other day you read or hear about a young person taking his or her own life because it just got to be too much. That not only breaks my heart, it also infuriates me. It saddens me because I feel like, as a society, we are missing the mark. Those of us who work with children, those of us who are raising our own children, need to equip ourselves and our youth with strategies to not only combat bullying, but also to understand the developmental process behind the actions. Apparently, many of you share my sentiments because you have personally reached out to me, requesting that I bring an expert on the show to discuss bullying and how we can help our children. Well, I cannot think of a better person to dive into such an important topic than Dr. G. Deborah Gaboa, MD, popularly known as Dr. G, is a go-to expert on raising and educating respectful, responsible, resilient young people. A parenting and youth development expert renowned for her contagious humor and no-nonsense prescriptions for character development and preventing risky behaviors, Dr. G inspires audiences with her illuminating stories and provides actionable tools to develop crucial life skills in children ages 2 to 22. Dr. G is a contributor on the CBS Morning Show Pittsburgh Today Live and has shared her doctor-tested, kid-approved advice with the media, seen nationally from NBC, ABC, and Fox, to Parents Magazine, Your Teen Magazine, to The Wall Street Journal, and Today.com. As a family physician and mom of four sons, Dr. G is a sought-after presenter to audiences including parents and educators, universities, and military families. Her latest book, Get the Behavior You Want Without Being the Parent You Hate, was released by Demos Publishing in September 2014. She has also authored three activity books based on her three R's of parenting: respect, responsibility, and resilience. Okay, moms, get a notebook and a pen or pencil because you will want to take notes. This episode of Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa is full of valuable information in regards to bullying. No matter what your child's age is, Dr. G has some effective strategies to share with you.
Dr. G, I can't thank you enough for doing this interview because this is such an important topic. We hear the word bullying all over the place, in school, out of school, in the home, and it's definitely a topic that my listeners really, really, really wanted me to dive into, and what better person to talk about than Dr. G. So thank you so much for doing the show.
Denise, I'm so glad to be here with you because this is something that affects all of us as parents and grandparents.
Great, great. Well, let's dive in right away, and we are actually going to be incorporating questions from my listeners. These are straight from the listeners in Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa, parents who have experienced their own bullying experience personally and now with their children. So the first question was from one of my listeners that asked, how can I teach my kids to stand up to a bully so they aren't targets?
So this is a great question, and a lot of us want to prevent bullying before it even gets rolling. And I think that that is absolutely our best defense, but not a good offense in terms of teaching our kids to pick fights with people. A good offense in terms of teaching our kids how to judge, and Denise, I don't know about you, but I hear all the time from my kids, oh, don't be judgy, and not just for my kids, but in society. But we do want to teach our kids to have good judgment about the social interactions that they're seeing and to understand what's happening so that they can prevent difficult situations before they come up.
Got you. Got you. So what are some self-defense strategies that we can teach our kids? Because I guess before I even get into that, we had talked off the record, and you were even mentioning something so profound that I think a lot of families miss, a lot of parents miss, is that bullying can start as young as, like, itty-bitty, like 2 years old. So this is something that isn't just for school-age children, so to speak. We can kind of really delve into this beforehand. So what are some self-defense strategies?
So let's talk about what it maybe bullying looks like in the toddler preschool age, because it's not usually what we think of, like, you know, a big kid coming up to a small kid and saying, you know, give me your lunch money or I'll beat you up. That is one stereotype of bullying. But bullying is anytime we use threats to get what we want from someone who's in a peer kind of situation or a colleague situation. So when I've heard with my own ears, when I used to work in preschool, a three-year-old girl say, well, if you play with her instead of me, I won't invite you to my birthday party. And that is bullying. I've heard a four-year-old boy say to another four-year-old boy, you can't play with us because you smell funny, right? So that's bullying. What we can teach our kids to do is just decide if something that happened to them hurt their feelings, to be able to say, hey, that hurt my feelings. Don't say that to me, please. That is so powerful because, especially at young ages, just saying that, because kids have learned hurting somebody's feelings is bad, will often make the other child say, oh, okay. It can be as simple as pointing out what you didn't like that will make another child in the younger ages change their behavior. When kids are a little bit older, or maybe are coming up against a child who doesn't have the insight or the remorse to stop themselves if they do something, you know, if they say, that hurt my feelings, don't do that. They say, oh, that hurt your feelings, you're a baby. You know, they get some sort of pushback. Then we can have our kids do two things. We want them to be able to say what they feel, but also say what they are. Say, actually, I'm not a baby. I think maybe you're behaving badly. But if they don't have the verbal skills or the confidence or the wherewithal to say that, you can say to your child, if somebody hurt your feelings and you tried once to fix it, now it's time to get a grown-up. Teaching kids to reach out for resources in preschool will give them that mindset. You know, a fifth-grade boy can't stand up for himself once and then go get a teacher without having some social problems. There's definitely some social pain if you tattle. So it's not exactly the same reaching out for resources when you're 10 as it is when you're 3. But we want our kids to have the habit of thinking, I have tried to solve this problem on my own, and it didn't go well. How can I get some help? The 10-year-old can get some help from friends or from a parent in ways that are maybe a little bit less dangerous socially than going and getting help from a teacher. Although I have to say there are some great teachers out there who make it clear, if you've had a social problem, here's how you can get some help. And they step in without causing anybody any social pain.
Yes. I'm coming at this as also a former elementary school teacher, and I just love how you're tapping into developmentally where they are age-wise, because it makes me think of differentiated instruction as a teacher. You know, like, it really, bullying looks, feels, and sounds different according to the ages and stages. And so then the approach would be different. And I guess, Dr. D, I jumped in, but I might need to back up a little bit and ask you to really define bullying, because we hear that word so often. And one of my teacher friends, who also is a listener of the show and a mother, really wanted you to define bullying, because she feels like it's a word that just kind of gets thrown around a little bit. So do you mind doing that for us, please?
Absolutely. So, and I think that there are a lot of great definitions out there, but I think that your listener's point is fantastic. We use this word bully, and what it has come to mean in our society is evil. And so it's a real problem for teachers, I think especially, and administrators, to point out to a parent that their child might be bullying someone, because kids and parents hear that as, that's a bad kid. When, and I know this isn't exactly what you asked me, but I just want to mention, and he said, bullying itself is a normal developmental thing for kids to try out, just like 2-year-olds hit, or, you know, 13-year-olds might try ignoring someone. Just because they try it out doesn't mean they're a bad kid at all. What matters is what happens next. They try it. If adults notice it and say, hey, that is unacceptable behavior, and they modify their behavior, then that's completely acceptable. That's a completely normal stretch. But now, because we've made bullying into this word that means terrible, bad, evil, when you say to a parent, you know, we have a problem because your son has been bullying another child, the parent feels like they have no choice but to step in front of their child and protect them, instead of saying, oh, okay, well, that's not acceptable. Let's work together to teach him some better social skills. Bullying does not mean evil. What bullying does mean is to manipulate someone socially in a way that makes them feel threatened or endangered.
when you define it that way, it really makes me ask the next question that one of my listeners had. And you touched on this a little bit already, Dr. G, but what really truly separates common childlike behavior from true bullying? And I love how you talked about recognizing it and then what happens next. And we're going to talk about that too, about what we should do next to help the bully as well as the child being bullied. But what can really truly separate common childlike behavior from true bullying?
Okay, so first of all, I do want to say I think bullying is a common childlike behavior, but it doesn't make it okay. Just like if you're 2.5-year-old, you got a call from a babysitter or grandma or somebody that your 2.5-year-old hit someone, you might think to yourself, I hope you would think to yourself, well, that's normal, she's 2, but you would also say, well, that's not okay, and here's what we do about it. I don't want you to think to yourself, if you get a call that your 2.5-year-old hit or bit someone, oh no, I'm raising a sociopath, because you're not. It's normal for 2.5-year-olds to get frustrated and lash out that way. That's a normal childlike behavior that's unacceptable. And I think what your listener wants to know is, what's the difference between childlike behaviors that you don't have to interfere with or step in and intercede, and bullying? Because with bullying, we do have to intercede. The difference, in my opinion, comes down to that child feeling threatened or endangered. When a child says, and I point this out to my son a lot, I have 4 sons in 6 years, and there is a lot of negotiating and manipulating and sometimes bullying that can happen in those interactions. So here's the difference I pointed out to my kids. If one of my sons says to the other one, well, if you won't play Chutes and Ladders with me now, I won't play Legos with you later, that's not bullying. That's negotiate. I might, as their mom, like for them to put a positive spin on that, but that's not maybe a reasonable expectation on my part. If one of my children says, well, if you won't play Chutes and Ladders with me now, I'll tell everybody at school that you still wear a pull-up at night, that's bullying.
Yes. Yes.
You hear the difference between negotiating and maybe even a little bit of manipulation, right? They weren't trading games, but my child recognized the fact that he knows in the patterns that his brother is going to ask him later on to play Legos. And so he pulled that out of thin air and said, well, I will. It's a little bit of a threat, right? If you don't do what I want now, I won't do what you do later. But that's actually a decent negotiating task. It's not bullying. It's not making that child feel threatened or endangered of, you know, of pain, social pain, physical pain, emotional pain. You know, there are things I do for you and things you do for me, so I'm going to point it out. But if he says, I'm going to tell something, I'm going to hurt you, I'm going to emotionally or socially hurt you by telling a secret about you to people that you don't want to know that secret, that is bullying.
Yes, okay. And this is becoming even clearer and clearer to me as a former educator and as a parent. And so now we're discussing what happens next. So we've defined bullying, we've set the tone for that, but what happens next? And we're going to talk about both sides, the child being bullied and the bully. So let's talk about the child being bullied. What is a healthy way to personally handle your own child when they come to you and report a bullying situation where they've been bullied, they've been socially, you know, or emotionally hurt in some way? What happens next? What does the parent do next? And how should the parent really talk to their child about the bully?
I'd like to talk about this, Denise, in terms of a child who's already verbal. Because this is happening to a 2- or 3-year-old, it makes it a little bit more complicated, as you know, because you can't have a deep conversation with a child that age necessarily about it. So let's talk about a child who's 5 years old or older, who comes to you and can tell you the whole story of what happened. You're not piecing it together from what the teacher said and those kinds of things. The first thing to do is to offer empathy and then put in the emotion you're hearing from your child. Sad, frustrating, embarrassing, scary, upsetting, whatever it is. And then just sit with that for a second. That sounds really upsetting. I'm sorry that happened. Give them a chance to feel their feelings, because that's a great way to show your love for them and that you're really listening. The second thing I would encourage a parent to do is to give a really non-judgmental request for more information. Can you tell me more about what was happening before that? Or can you tell me that story again and give me more details? There's a great author, Michael Thompson, who wrote a book about boys socialized, about actually kids socialized, and called Best Friends, Worst Enemies. And he points out in there, in his years as a child psychologist, that he and his partner, who's also a child psychologist, would often joke that kids come in with a story that should, if they were being honest, start like this. It all started when he hit me back. It's really common for kids to start with the grievance against them. I think that's human nature. It's not a criticism. But it's really helpful if you can get them to rewind 10 minutes or 2 days and try and find the real beginning of the story.
That is so true. I can attest to that as a teacher. That is really important. Wow.
So first is empathy. Second is more information gathering. And not information gathering, you know, in our heads we're thinking, ooh, there's something else. Oh, I'm calling this other parent, or I'm calling the school, and I'm going to, you know, raise holy heck. But first, just as non-judgmentally as you can, get your child to tell you without leading them more about the dynamics, more about that relationship, more about that situation, whatever you can. And then the third thing I would really like to encourage parents to do, if they don't feel like this is an ongoing situation that they've known about that is really dangerous, is to try to take one step back to show your child the faith you have in them as a confident problem solver. Bullying, by definition, makes a child feel less powerful. So this is a great opportunity for a parent to make that child feel more powerful by saying something really simple, showing empathy one more time in this sentence and saying, that sounds really challenging. What do you think you could do? That one question, asking, what do you think you could do? Let that child know that they do still have power. That power has not all been stripped away from them. And if they don't have an answer, if they are dissolving in tears or frustrated and angry and say, I don't know, that's okay. But you have sent a message by asking what they could do that will start to change the way they think and remind them that there are choices to be made and they do have options, even if they haven't thought of them.
Wow, that's incredible. Well, Dr. G, because I just, when you were discussing that, I immediately went back to my childhood, and not knocking or judging, you know, some parents at all, but I just can recall some parents in my childhood that I even had someone, like a parent, like come to my house and was like banging on the door and was like, you said this about my child. And the truth of the matter was I had said nothing, but you know, children were starting rumors to try to cause, you know, drama. And somebody said, well, Denise said this about you. I didn't even know what was going on. And so you just mentioned something. Give your child power. Give them, empower them. Because when we take things into our own hands, now, of course, in extreme circumstances, I'm sure, you know, you would suggest, yeah, you know, there's, and we'll talk about that, you know, clear times when adults need to step in. But in most of these, in fact, bullying situations, the relatively minor ones, you've got to empower the children because they, like you said, their power's been stripped away from them. And when you take things into your own hands and you take over, you're just stripping away their power almost like the bully did.
Well,
you agree?
You're reinforcing that idea in their head that they're powerless. And I want kids to be resilient. I actually am less concerned that I solve the problem right in front of us that happened on that school bus that day than that I teach my child the skills that they need so that they can handle it when bad things happen. When
you
teach them that resilience, what we're saying is, I think you've got this. I've got your back. If you don't, I'm your partner in helping you find a solution. But I think you can find a solution that's going to work.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And that's so valuable for parents to walk away from today. So let's talk about, before we go into what are some ways that we can help the bully, let's dive in a little bit more to talk about when it gets physical or when is the line crossed that a parent absolutely needs to step in.
So anything that is repetitive, your child has tried solving it, and it's not going away, or they've tried waiting, because sometimes waiting is a valuable tool. Kids' social dynamics change really quickly. I don't know what ages you thought these, but you know that things can change on a dime. So they've tried waiting, or they've tried stepping up and solving it, and it is a repetitive thing. If it's causing repetitive school avoidance or physical symptoms in your child, like stomach aches or headaches or anything that lets you know, poor sleep, anything that lets you know that this is something that is weighing on your child all the time, not just in those few minutes or that one day, that's the time to think about getting more actively involved. If there are physical threats against your child, even if you think there's no way those kids could carry them out, you have to step in front of a child who is under 18 to say, nope, sorry, nobody can speak that way towards my child. Nobody can threaten them. Because unfortunately, kids can get dead. You know, when I was growing up, most of the time, if something got physical with this. But that, people have leveled up, and it can get dangerously physical very quickly.
More with Dr. G after this brief message. I truly can't thank you enough for listening to Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa. Don't forget to subscribe to Mom Talk with Denise LaRosa on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. And also be sure to give us a 5-star rating. We'd really appreciate it, and it would help keep the show going.
I actually have had friends near and dear to my heart that ultimately, one in particular, ultimately in his 20s, committed suicide. And I was actually voted for his girl because my heart always went out to those being bullied. I was bullied at various points in my life growing up, and I just always reached out to those who I felt like needed a friend. And you giving these tips and these steps before it gets to that level is just so important. Then that, in particular, the teenage years, you know, when they feel like it's not cool to tell an adult, and you really help paint a picture for exactly how they can transition, how they can take up for themselves and reach out to someone. So that's so important.
Yeah, as a parent of middle schoolers, I would say two things. Developmentally, middle school is the hardest time. So that 10 to 13-year-old, 14-year-old age range is the hardest time for this, because it's when kids feel most strongly drawn towards kids their own age, and yet have the least maturity and social skills to handle it if things are going badly. So I think a lot of parents in that age range wonder if perhaps their child is being bullied, and would they know? So I just want to give a couple of suggestions to parents about and grandparents about how to start those conversations if you're just wondering. Even if things seem okay, if you maybe just overhear something in your basement that you didn't like between kids that are hanging out at your house, or you're driving carpool, which is a great time to get a sense of social dynamics, something strikes you as off, or you see something in one of your kids' eyes or their behavior, or they're not eating dinner or something, and you just want to know, and you ask, and they say everything's fine, then there's a couple of other things you can do to draw out those conversations, which will maybe make your kids more comfortable talking about things that they're noticing or experiencing. One of the things that you can do is to watch the TV shows that your kid likes. Sit down and watch it with them and ask about the social dynamics on that show. Child likes the teen drama, and you sit down and watch a few episodes, and one of the kids on there is getting bullied, which won't take long to find. They show it a lot. And you say, hey, so what's going on there? Tell me about the storyline. And then you can say, what do you think they should do? You can even say, have you ever known anybody that happened to? Or, you know, as another thing you can do if you don't find an opportunity in television is to just say, I was with some other parents. They were talking about a situation, a kid I don't even know. They didn't mention the name, but I just wondered, what's going on socially at your school? Ask them, as an expert in the social situation at their school, to tell you a little bit about what's happening to other people. Don't even necessarily relate it specifically to your child. What did you do? What's happening to you? Just tell me what you've ever seen, what's going on, without naming names. It will give them an opportunity to start that conversation. The last tip I have for drawing out middle school or high school kids about this is text them. Kids are sometimes much more comfortable talking about difficult stuff over text or over messaging. So if you just message your child, hey, you seemed a little quieter today, I wanted to check in, anything you want to tell me about, they will sometimes open up over a screen in a way that they feel uncomfortable doing face-to-face.
Wow. Yeah, I get that. I love that. And I wish I had that growing up, but, you know, texting wasn't around. Cell phones were just starting to get a little bit smaller, but that's a huge, huge benefit to, you know, to technology. So that's excellent, excellent advice, Dr. G. What are some ways that teachers and parents can help the bully? Because I think the bully gets left out. The bully needs help, you know, almost as much, if not more, sometimes than the child being bullied. So what can we do to help the bully?
So one thing I'm going to encourage educators especially to do is to talk about bullying, but not talk about the bully. Because if you call a kid a bully, then they go, oh, okay, subconsciously at least, although sometimes consciously too, I'm the villain. All right, I can do that. I can live up to that reputation. And we don't want that. Most kids, to be honest, experience all three parts of a bullying situation several times in their childhood. They experience being a victim, they experience being a bully, and they experience being a bystander and watching someone else get bullied. And so we want kids to have the skills in all three of those situations. situations to turn the experience around. So when we talk to kids about those times when you bully, assuming that everybody has, then it normalizes the behavior and gives them a path out. It doesn't label them in a way that they think they're stuck forever being the jerk.
Yes, that is so true. And, I mean, when you said that just about everybody, I'm sure I almost want to say everybody has been each person in that role. And I immediately thought of myself, you know. I mean, for as nice as I'd like to think I was, I bullied here and there. I was a bystander. I was bullied. So that's a valuable tool in the way that you can, like you said, turn that situation around, flip it for the bully, because I'm sure the bully could instantly, and I hate to even label the person the bully, but the person that's doing the bullying could really instantly relate to how that felt for him or her whenever they were the one that was being bullied.
And often kids who are bullying are doing it because they perceive that they don't have any other choice in that situation. Sometimes they're just doing it because it gets them what they want, or it feels good to have power, to have social power. I was talking to one of my sons about social power, and because that's a phrase we use a lot at home. You know, in that situation, you have, like, the birthday kid has the most social power, or I hear you saying that was a hard situation. Who has the social power in that dynamic, and why, and what could you do to equal the playing field? No matter which of those three situations you're in, what could you do? Those three roles that you're in, what could you do to equal the playing field? And he said to me, because he's on student council for his grade, he said, this is weird because we're talking about bullying, but these are the same ideas that Mr. Minkus at school was talking about leadership. And it's absolutely true. You know, when you use the skills that a bully might use, but you use them for good, right, to get your whole class to work towards a social service project or get everybody to clean up after themselves in the lunchroom, you're using the same sort of manipulation that someone uses when they're bullying. You're just using it towards the good, right? You might even, you know, sort of say, like, oh, the teachers do it. They say, oh, I'm going to call out the kid who leaves their tray behind because we're working hard to make it easier on the people who work in the lunchroom. Well, that's embarrassing, somebody who didn't do what you wanted. How is that not bullying? Well, we label it differently in our society if it's for a good end than if it's for a selfish or mean end. So teaching kids about leadership skills and social skills, as opposed to just labeling someone as a bully, can really make them more effective in their interactions and feel less bad about themselves. I've kind of gone around and around. To answer your actual question, what do you do with a kid who's bullying? I think some of the steps are exactly the same as when you're worried about a child who's been bullied. And that is, first, you show empathy. And I know that sounds really hard, but it creates a relationship. So whether you're an educator or a parent or a grandparent, if you overheard or hear a story or were in the room when you saw something that you would label as bullying, you show empathy. I see that you are frustrated in this situation. I hear that you are feeling, and then you put in, you know, upset, angry, embarrassed, whatever you notice, and really try to form that relationship by saying, I hear that you feel that way, and I'm sorry that this is happening to you. Even though that's strange because we think the bullying is the actor, they perceive that something is happening to them. You know, they were playing on the basketball court with their best buds, and somebody else came up and wanted to play, and they feel intruded upon. We don't give a lot of credence to that, but they do feel that way. So if you want to get somewhere, the first thing to do is to show empathy. I hear that you feel frustrated because you had a perfect situation for your game, and now you don't. Then ask for more information. Can you tell me more about that situation? And do it in his non-judgmental way. This is the same thing I suggested to kids about they've been bullied. Gather more information. Because for them, it might be that you don't know that 3 days ago, they walked up to a game this other kid was playing and the kid didn't let them play. And you may see that it's more of a level playing field than you thought it was. So as a teacher, you know, you've got to figure out, it doesn't start when he hit me back. Let's try and find the beginning of this story from both kids' point of view. And then say, what do you think you could do? And so when we go through those same three steps with the kids we perceive as bullying, we often empower them to find a more positive solution without telling them what to do, so that next time, maybe, they're gathering the skills to be more resilient and kind.
That situation, the scenario that you laid before us of, like, on the basketball court, that's really a great visual, and it really is, it just brings it home. It brings back memories even for the parents, and I love how you have the same similar approach to the situation. It's just brilliant. Now, what about being bullied via social media? Because Dr. G, when you and I were growing up, we didn't have social media, and I'm so glad because every day when I'm on there, I even see, you know, celebrities getting bullied, you know, and the things that you hear and you read and you see, it's just awful. It's just terrible, and I cannot imagine. Growing up, I'm thinking of my little ones, my 2.5-year-old and my 9-month-old, eventually, like, growing up in this world, and Lord knows where social media will be by then, by the time they're teenagers. This is really a problem. We see it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and a lot of the parents that reached out to me for this episode kind of mentioned the sexist, saying that girls were the worst with this type of bullying. So what are your thoughts and advice on this cyberbullying?
Okay, so this is an incredibly important topic, and I want to suggest a few different things, and two of them are preventive. I mean, this is going to sound like a simple but really radical idea. The first thing I want to say is, please don't let your child get a social media app until they're 13. Just like it says, when you click I agree, you're agreeing that you're over 13. There are great developmental as well as legal reasons for that age limit. I can't tell you the number of kids I know under 13 who have Instagram and Snapchat and all of these things, and they're just not ready. Even though they want it, even though all their friends have it, even though they will be socially isolated and absolutely actually die without it, we know that they won't. And sometimes standing between them and what they want, but they and their peers are not actually quite ready for, is a great way to let them cook a little longer, because the worst of this, especially for girls, is in the 10, 11, 12-year-old age range. I have a kid who is tall enough and absolutely coordinated enough and has the judgment enough to drive, but he's 12, and we won't let him get a license because you're not allowed to do it until you're 16. I actually think he could probably handle it, but he's my kid, and I don't have a lot of perspective about him, and I certainly wouldn't want somebody else lying and clicking I agree online that their 12-year-old could drive a car because they could hurt my kid. So I think that a lot of parents feel like, oh, what's the harm? But the harm is pretty demonstrable. And I think that we often feel like, oh, but they'll be really socially isolated and bullied if they don't have it. And actually, the studies don't bear that out. So the first preventive I would encourage parents to do is not actually let their kids get on social media apps until they turn 13. The next thing I would say is watch a couple of things online with your kids about cyberbullying. And I'll give you one example. There's a great website called Kids in the House, and they have an amazing 2.5-minute video of children talking about getting bullied on social media. It's called End Bullying, E-N-D, bullying, all one word. And if you can search that and you'll find this video, it's incredibly powerful, especially for kids to watch. You can just ask them, do you think this really happened? What do you think is going on? How can we help? What do kids need to know? There are some excellent resources about teaching kids the effects of cyberbullying, but the most effective that I found when I traveled the country talking to teenagers is to just give kids this idea. Before you click send on any post, tweet, text, anything, picture it blown up real big on a piece of paper and post it in the hallway at school with your name on the bottom. How do you feel about that? I had another educator tell me that they call it the grandma test. Send any tweet that you would be okay with your grandma reading and then explaining to her what you meant.
Yeah, that would be pretty intense.
Right, you know, and if you were to read it to her, she'd say, hey, baby girl, tell me more about that. Who is that person? What did they do? They said that. Well, how's their grandma going to feel when they read that? You know, it just gives us, it's a great visual, just like you got litmus tests for kids, to do a gut check. Not do I think this is okay? Will my friends think it's funny? Will I not get trouble? Because those are the questions kids do ask themselves. But what would my grandma or that kid's grandma that I'm writing about, what would they think?
Wow, that's deep. That's awesome. I love that. I absolutely love that. And yeah, that's really, really, really good and so important. And I love that whole concept of the driver's license, just really kind of opening our eyes and just being blunt with it and real. And like, there is a reason for the age limits, you know, or like you have to be 13. Yes, I love that. It's so important, Dr. G, that we as parents don't get wrapped up into, oh, but my child won't be like socially connected and all that. We don't get wrapped up in like in this whole society like shift with the social media and feel like, I mean, we're getting bullied into or pressured into putting our children in these awkward and developmentally inappropriate situations.
Because even if your child can handle it, and listen, every parent is the best expert on their own child, unquestioned. But even if your child can handle it, chances are she or he is going to get hooked up on social media with some kids who can't handle it, who aren't ready yet. And so it's for that reason that I think it's really important. There's one more compelling argument, I think, Denise, for not clicking I agree that your 11-year-old is 13 when they're not. And that is because we are big into teaching our kids about accountability and honesty. And that really muddies the waters.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, yes. I totally get that. That's so true. And I think sometimes when we're dealing with cyberspace and social media, it's almost like rules get thrown out the window because there's that lack of accountability in a sense. You feel almost like you can say and do anything because it's just in cyberspace somewhere. You're not like one-on-one in front of somebody. But the impact that it has, like even like you said, for modeling accountability and honesty and integrity by clicking agree for your child, that's huge.
Yeah, I do understand that it's a huge pressure on parents, but I do also, before we're done, want to talk about what can you do if you're worried your child is being cyberbullied. One of the reasons that cyberbullying is so terrifying to professionals, to parents and grandparents, is because that same isolation that allows people to say things they would genuinely never have the guts to say to your face makes the child who's being bullied feel entirely isolated and without resources. Totally powerless and without resources. And it comes out 24/7. So a couple of things that we can do to help protect them. One is also a preventive. I want to encourage parents, because kids have a device, no matter how old their child is, up until about age 16, to charge that device overnight in the parent's bedroom. Don't give your child access to hearing that ding and waking up and having that adrenaline surge and going to check their social media app or their texting. No matter whether which of those three roles you think they might be in, bully, or bystander, because it ruins their sleep and it gives them no safe space. So make sure that they know that a half an hour before bedtime until they leave in the morning, that device is on the charger in the parents' or the grandparents' bedroom. The other thing I really want to encourage parents to do is to peek alongside their child on social media and to be reading those texts, because it is too isolating and things can escalate too quickly. You know, a child can go from feeling like they are in a socially completely comfortable spot to, just like happened to you, Denise, when that person banged on your parents' door, to feeling in 30 seconds that the world is falling out under their feet. But there's no parent standing next to them saying, wait, what are you saying about my child? What's happening here? They're completely alone in their room and they can become completely hopeless very quickly. And so we have to be alongside our kids. Because, you know, you might have a meeting and you get home late. You don't necessarily lay eyes on every one of your children in a way that you're really looking to see if they're okay every single day. And that's normal. So we have to also be checking out what's going on in their social media lives, because we have to know if there's a red flag, because it can be a wall coming at them at 60 miles an hour in a way that things that happen only at school in real life just take a little bit more time. There's a great book that's just coming out called Kindness Wins. By a woman named Galit Green, who, as an adult, as a very respected blogger, got bullied on Huffington Post on a piece she wrote about weight. And she turned that lemon into real lemonade by talking about teaching our kids kindness online. And one of her suggestions in that book that I really recommend is about helping each other as parents and grandparents and family members and friends to follow alongside our kids on social media and see what they're up to. So you don't necessarily want your 13- or 14-year-old kids and their friends to friend you on all of your main social media platforms. You might not want your kids, 13, 14-year-old kids and their friends to follow you on all of your social media, but you should have a handle. You should have a profile under which you follow all of them, so that if you see something going on with somebody else's kid who's a friend of yours, we can just all look out for each other's children, just like we used to in the neighborhood. Now, Galit really recommends that we have to be looking out for our friends' kids online in that neighborhood, so that we all know if something's going on that might put a child at risk.
That's so important. And can you repeat the title of the book and the author again, please?
Yes, the book is called Kindness Wins, W-I-N-S, and the author's name is Galit Green, it's B-R-E-E-N, and it's just come out, and I think it's a really fantastic resource for talking to our kids about online kindness and thinking about when she starts each chapter with a parent-to-parent conversation starter. And it's wonderful for talking about these issues, whether you're hanging out with a friend over coffee or you're dealing with a school issue and you want to talk to administrators and teachers. She talks about everything in a very positive way, but in a very straightforward way as well.
What an amazing resource. Thank you, thank you. Okay, last but not least, Dr. G, we've been talking about bullying taking place outside of the home, but let's not forget when there is sibling bullying. That is something that is really a whole different ball game, I guess you could say, a whole different ball of wax. So sibling bullying, what are your thoughts? What are some tips and strategies for sibling bullying?
Denise, do you know that I have a YouTube channel where I put up these 1 or 2 minute videos every week, and one of the most popular I have on there is how do you tell the difference between sibling bickering and sibling bullying? This is actually a really easy litmus test. If you're in one part of your home and you hear an interaction between your kids, or you're sitting in the car with them or at the table with them and hear an interaction and you're not sure if it's bickering or bullying, all you have to do is imagine that the kid you think might be bullying is somebody else's kid saying that to your child. If you would label it as bullying on the playground or in the schoolyard, then it's still bullying at your house. And that's okay. We have such an amazing opportunity at the times when we happen to hear our kids try to bully each other because it allows us to intervene in the moment. Our kids will do this. They will play with social power. They will manipulate each other. They will talk to each other. But what we get to do, just like you would do with your 2-year-old who might hit her sibling, is say, oh, no, no, that does not go. That's not an okay interaction, not in our family and not in the world. But it's a little bit like training a puppy. If you have that opportunity to catch them in the act, you'll be really effective in correcting them. So you say, hey, I just want to stop you right there. When you threaten your sister that way, that's bullying. We don't do that. Why don't you try getting what it is you want her to do again in a completely different way with some kindness? And often your child can solve that problem without you telling them how to do that or what to say. You've just pointed out to them that that thing that might work, it's like whining. If it works, kids will do it. They'll try it anyway. But we have to not give them what they ask for if they want. We have to get them to ask nicely before we help. In that same way, they have to learn that bullying might work, but it's not acceptable. So we're going to step in and say, try that again.
So simple, yet so powerful. And that leads me to the final tidbit of this interview. I really would love for you, Dr. G, to please let the listeners know how we can tap into your resources, access them, and stay connected to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I have a website called Ask Dr. G, and you can send me questions on there that I will get back to you just as soon as I can and post an answer on my blog. That's what I do is parent Q&A and educator Q&A. But in addition to that, I do have a book that you could grab on Amazon, actually a few of them, but the most recent one that really applies to these ages is called Get the Behavior You Want Without Being the Parent You Hate. And I have a YouTube channel and Twitter and Facebook, and I love interacting with parents and teachers. So I hope that you will give me a shout on my website if this has been useful or if you have a follow-up question. I would love to discuss it.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to stay in touch with me by visiting www.deniseinlarosa.com, where you can sign up for my newsletter, get some valuable mommy resources, and giveaways. You can also follow me on Twitter at Denise in La Rosa, on Facebook, Mom Talk with Denise La Rosa, and or email me at denise@deniseinlarosa.com. You have been listening to Mom Talk with Denise La Rosa. I will leave you with this quote by Michael J. Fox. One's dignity may be assaulted, vandalized, and cruelly mocked, but it can never be taken away unless it is surrendered. Thank you for listening.